ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
With the third pick in the 2022 draft, the Houston Rockets select Jabari Smith Jr.
Okay.
From Auburn University.
Jabari Smith Jr. goes number three in the NBA draft, despite most reports, most national media, media types in general saying that it would definitely be him going number one, followed by Chet, who did go number two. And then Jabari Smith, number three, falls to the Rockets. Look, this was a good night for the Rockets. They clean up with Tari Eason as well as Ty Washington. This was best case scenario for a lot of people and for a lot of Rockets fans.
No, this was the dream scenario. We literally, I talked, this is why you hedge your bets, okay? This is why you prepare. I try to tell people this all the time. This is why you prepare for disappointment and hope for the best. Because yesterday I was prepared, Sean was prepared for Chet Holmgren. We literally talked ourselves into the worst case scenario. That was my nightmare scenario.
And I love a tall, lanky white guy. I'm from Indiana. That's our type. But I did not want Chet either.
No.
And I thought when Pablo went number one.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, there's a really good chance that Chet Holmgren is going to come to the Houston Rockets.
I thought it was a lock. I think every Rockets fan held their breath for the time that Paolo Banchero went number one to the time they announced Chet Holmgren, or at least we saw the spoilers from Woj and Shams about Chet going number two to Oklahoma City. Everybody was on bated breath because this was make or break. And then, sure enough, Sam Presti and the Oklahoma City Thunder, they do exactly what everybody thought they were going to do all along, and Jabari Smith falls to number three. And it goes from nightmare scenario for the Rockets to the dream scenario for the Rockets. Because I said yesterday Banchero has the skill set to be number one overall.
Sure.
So does Jabari. I feel like both of them are incredibly talented NBA players. But Jabari has a lower floor but a higher ceiling than Banchero does. And he fits what the Rockets are building better than Banchero does. His fit within this scheme is so much better. He has the potential to be an elite 3-and-D wing in this league, but a 3-and-D wing with really honestly like a better Chris Middleton mold.
It's so clear that they're building around Jalen Green. I personally love it. I'm Vanessa Richardson, by the way. That voice you hear is Josh Beard. As Paul Gallant is on vacation, Josh is going to be hanging out with us. Well, he hung out with us a lot this week, and will hang out with us next week as well. And then our producer is always behind the glass. Is Sean Mapes. As always, we want to hear from you. What did you think last night of the Rockets' picks, of the way they went about things? 713-780-ESPN. We did hear from Jabari Smith Jr. And one thing that these broadcasts do, Josh, that I personally love, because I'm a media nerd and I love the drama, right, is they do the ISO shots of the guys, the isolated shots of the guys that think that they're going to go number one.
Yeah.
And then don't. And you could see a little bit of that disappointment, maybe a lot of bit disappointment, shock on Jabari Smith Jr.'s face. What I think that has created is going to be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. And when he had his media availability, I was proven right.
Is there anything about this moment that maybe puts a chip on your shoulder?
Yeah, definitely. You know what I mean? It wasn't what I was expecting, but I'm happy to be here. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to be nowhere else.
There you go. I like that answer because it's twofold, right? I liked that he was honest that, yes, there's a chip on my shoulder. I think I should have gone number one. I don't know what they're thinking. But I am happy to be in Houston. I'm excited about what the Rockets are doing. So he had, I mean, you may view it as maybe like a politically correct answer, but I liked it. It was like that honesty with the twinge of, but don't get me wrong, I'm excited to be in H-Town.
Well, yeah, I truly, truly believe that he is excited to be in H-Town. He's also got to be excited because of the two guys who ended up getting drafted with him are guys who he played against in the SEC this last year. And he was tweeting about it. He was all H-Town. He dropped in H-Town himself. It is funny, if you go back, it was just like 2 weeks ago, he said, But he was asked why he didn't take a visit to Houston to work out for the Rockets. He said, well, I don't see myself making it past the first two picks. Now, I at first I was like, what are you doing, kid? Like, just you never know. Just go visit with him. Go right. work out with him. But I did like that he said, I just want to keep myself in that mindset. I want to keep myself in the mindset that I am going to go number one or number two, and I'm not going to make it to number three. And so, yeah, like because he was in that mindset, now he set himself up for, much like I set myself up for disappointment and hope for the best and got what I wanted.
There you go.
He set himself up for the best case scenario, knowing if he didn't get that, there'd be that chip on his shoulder, right? And so, yeah, I think he's all in. He's an incredibly talented dude. One of his best qualities is his work ethic and his hustle. And there's no way he's going to come in with that chip and add that to his already incredible elite work ethic and hustle and not make an impact for the Rockets early on. And what's hilarious, I mean, if you look at the Rockets depth chart right now, they actually only have one traditional power forward on the depth chart. Everybody else is a small forward that plays power forward or vice versa, right? He is he's going to be the guy at the four
right.
for the Rockets. He can guard four positions right now. He could possibly work himself into guarding five positions. He could play three positions right now if he wanted to. He's one of the better, most versatile defenders coming out of the draft. He shot 42% from three in like 5.5 attempts per game last year. He can nail contested threes. One of the best parts about his offensive game is his shot off the dribble. This guy in transition is nuts. He'll grab a rebound off the glass. He'll in transition just jump up and shoot a three with a guy in his face, nail him all
the
time.
We have a listener who's a happy Auburn fan. 2141 on the text line says, as an Auburn fan living in Houston, I'm stoked that Jabari is coming to Houston. He's a grinder and competitor. Watching what he was able to do and show as a freshman was incredible. He is a grinder. He is kind of that gym rat. I had really talked myself into Bancaro because I thought for sure he was coming here. Another storyline from last night was how wrong the national media was. And I will say this, like Woj and all those guys, they're getting up-to-date information. So I always tell people, it's not that they're necessarily wrong, because at the time, what they're tweeting is correct. I mean, they're talking to the GMs. They're talking to the scouts. Maybe they're in with Elon Musk and they have people's passwords. I don't know. But they're not necessarily wrong. It changes so quickly. But there were some guys that were wrong. You brought this to my attention, Sean Mapes. Chris Haynes, incorrect. Not good.
Yes, the start of the draft was a rough one for Chris Haynes. He tweeted with the number two pick in the NBA draft.
Oh, no.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are selecting Jabari Smith Jr. from Auburn. He later had to delete that tweet because Woj and Shams came back and said, actually, it's going to be Chet Holmgren.
Yeah.
And that's what ended up happening. But it made my heart skip a beat in the bad way. I know that's normally a good thing. It made me grab my chest because I was going to have a heart attack because I thought we were going to have Chet Holmgren, who I feel like we're pretty unanimous on not loving.
Right.
And he may prove us all wrong, but yes. The thing that concerned me the most is the lack of the ability to provide his medical information.
Yes.
That's concerning to me.
And just as a dumb fan, him in the suit, I was like, there's no way. Like, his body in a suit makes no sense.
He looks a little emaciated.
He looks like Jack Skellington.
That's a great comparison.
He's the stick bug from A Bug's Life, and I don't think that guy could play basketball.
No, I don't think he ever put on weight.
Yeah, well, no, there are conversations about that among, like, trainers and nutritionists about how some guys, their bodies hit a certain point, and that's it. There's no more muscle that they can gain. Probably not going to gain fat. And maybe he's not like that. We may see a Gordon Hayward type of transformation, which I think he might have had a little help with. I don't know. But we may see that with Chet Holmgren, or that may be as big as he can get.
Well, some people kept giving Chet the Giannis Antetokounmpo comparison, and that just blew me away. It's not even close. Like,
was that Kendrick Perkins?
I did see Kendrick Perkins. Did he say that?
He was doing a player comps after each pick.
Yes.
And he said it's like Porzingis and Antetokounmpo had a baby.
Yeah, that was. And I love Perk.
I love Perk too.
I was like, eh.
Yeah, I can't stand Kendrick Perkins' NBA analysis. It's the worst. He wasn't the best player either, though, so it makes sense. The thing that if you look at some of these guys who came out, Jabari Smith is kind of small too. He's 19 years old. He's got room to grow, but you could see the growth. Like, you could see the shoulder width. He looks like a guy who has a good frame that can put on a little bit more size, put on a little bit more weight. Kevin Durant, when he was coming out, he was a string bean, but you could see he had the frame to put on a little bit more size. He did that. Same thing with Giannis. I mean, Giannis just turned into a freak over from his rookie season to his second year because he had the frame for it. And if you work, if you have nutritionists and work with trainers, you can work into that. Chet, if you see his shoulders, I think his shoulder width is smaller than his hip width. Like, there's the proportions and ratios of his body don't look like a guy who can put on any weight. So maybe he can put on a few more pounds. Maybe he can get a little bigger. But he's going to get absolutely dominated in the paint. Now, he can shoot. Maybe he can be a great shooter. But you're not drafting guy number two overall to just be a spot shooter. You want him to be a guy that can take over the game. And with his size, I don't think Chet will ever be that. And the fact that the Rockets – I went from nightmare scenario, oh, my God, what is Raphael Stone doing yesterday?
All of the emotions.
To, like, I think Raphael Stone had a masterclass draft. And I give them a 100% A+ with everybody. First, obviously, Jabari. Tari Eason could be possibly the best perimeter defender in this draft and has the length and the speed and the lateral quickness to be an elite defender in the NBA. And then Ty Washington's a shot creator and a great defender, too. I think this was perfect for them.
This was, and we're going to talk about not only his draft, but how it compares to another general manager in Houston's drafts coming up in a couple of minutes. But first, we're going to talk about the Astros. Not the best last night, a game that we would like to forget. Plus, what the hell is a workable suspension? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Driven down the left field line. It is a base hit. It goes into the corner. And the Yankees have done it again. Trevino scores. And they come all the way back for a dramatic 7-6 victory. Their ninth walk-off of the year.
And it would be Aaron Judge that would walk it off in the ninth inning for the Astros to fall to the Yankees. Astros were up 6-3 going into the ninth. And then Giancarlo Stanton had that three-run homer. It was the battle of the three-run homers throughout the day. Alvarez had a three-run homer. Bregman had a three-run homer. Stanton had a three-run homer. And then Aaron Judge eventually walked it off. Presley, not impressive.
No.
Presley was gassed. Presley looked like he couldn't be accurate. He looked like mentally he just wasn't there. I'm not like giving up on Ryan Presley as a closer or anything, but I think we need to see more solid performances from him. And certainly this first game, I know it's just one game, but man, you don't want to lose like this to the Yankees.
No, that was my first thought, was any other team.
Any other team, who cares? Just
right.
A bad night. But the Dodgers or the Yankees, no.
Well, especially now, you know, earlier in the week, Paul and I had talked about what we want to see from the Astros during this stretch. And Paul said he wanted to see specifically Yuli and Bregman start to pick it up with the bats. And I said, you know what I want to see? I want to see pitching consistency from start to finish. All nine innings, every game, I want to see pitching consistency. Well, Paul's getting his wish, as usual, because Paul gets what Paul wants. And
he'll tell you that he never gets what he wants.
He gets what he wants all the time. But the pitching consistency wasn't there last night. Presley did not look good. And it's disappointing to have the bats be as good as they were. Yordan's still going on an absolute tear. I mean, you have people from – I have friends that I know that are Mets fans, Yankees fans. I had a friend yesterday that's a Mets fan that was watching – the Yankees Astros and was just like, Yordan's an absolute beast. And he's getting that national notoriety that we here in Houston have all known he's going to finally get at some point. And for it to be wasted in the ninth when you're up 6-3 and have Aaron Judge of all the people, I like him. He's a fine enough guy. But like, have Aaron Judge with a walk-off hit and you lose 7-6 to this team, it's brutal.
It is brutal. It did not make Astros fans happy. I will say this, a little bit of a positive note. It did make me excited for October. I mean, these teams, when they play each other, there's that extra juice, there's that extra motivation, and for there to be that many three-run home run bombs was exciting to me. So the Astros taking on the Yankees again, what do you look for today? What do they need to do to get over that hump? Not that they're in a slump of any sorts, but to get a win over, again, what a team is that they want to do well against.
Pitch the ball good. dum-dums. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said dum-dums. That was rude. Pitch well. Pitch consistently. Let's get your location. Let's get that velo up. Let's get some strikeouts. Like, let's have a good day pitching from the starter to the bullpen. Everybody get together. Bregman, keep doing what you're doing. You've looked so great these last few games.
And shout out to Bregman for that. Yeah. Shout out to Bregman for that. I will say, I mean, can we say he's fully back to what he was? No, but he has taken some serious steps.
That home run last night, that looked like an old Breggy swing.
Yeah, it did.
Right?
Looked like an old Breggy bomb.
And it just, it felt so good for that to keep happening. So the bats are looking good right now. Keep that up. We just need to see more consistency from the pitching, which is what I was concerned about the entire time going into the stretch. Now, the fact that you know, the Astros took those back-to-back games against the Mets, and then going into the ninth, we're leading the Yankees 6-3. I'm still happy with the way this road trip has gone so far. But somebody last night one of my friends last night is like, "Oh, I'd be totally fine with splitting the series with New York." No. I want to take the next three games away from them.
Yeah.
I want the Astros to steal their hearts. I want them to stomp on them, and I want all Yankees fans to be sad for the rest of their lives. And then we get to go play the Mets for a couple more games, get to have fun, watch some good players there, beat them, play the Yankees one more time, and just kind of like kick them as we walk out the New York door.
Today at 6:05 p.m., the Astros take on the Yankees again, and we also got a little bit of a Lance McCullers Jr. update. I believe he's supposed to throw BP maybe on Saturday. So tomorrow we'll see. Certainly Lance McCullers Jr. Look, the starting pitching is not the issue for the Astros,
right,
but it will be nice to get Lance back. Josh, have you ever heard of a workable suspension?
A workable suspension?
A workable suspension, because that is what Boomer Esiason said today on WFAN radio in New York about what is being quote-unquote worked out with Deshaun Watson.
What?
I mean, you know, when I was in the NFL, if you did something wrong, you got suspended. You didn't even have a hearing or anything else. And then I'm hearing that Deshaun Watson, his representatives, the NFLPA, and the NFL are all sitting down trying to come up with some sort of workable suspension for Deshaun Watson.
I mean,
I've never heard of anything so ridiculous in my life.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Workable suspension?
Yeah, something that's workable for everybody.
For everybody.
That's going to satisfy everybody, you mean. Okay. Like 8 weeks.
It's ridiculous. I mean, the NFL, and I know that they tread very lightly in this area because they've made mistakes before, and now they're trying to spread out the responsibility. So it's not just theirs, that they have engaged with the union. The union and the NFL have picked the person, the Sue L. Robinson, a former federal judge, to sit in judgment of everything that she's been handed. She is the one that's going to make the decision. I don't even know why they had this meeting, because she's the ultimate one that has to decide, you know, how bad is it and what the punishment should be.
All right, I mean, shout out to Boomer Esiason, because honestly, you guys may have a different opinion. That may be like the most information we've gotten on this and what they're actually sitting down and doing. Because remember, there had been the tweets about and it was from Josina Anderson, I believe, that Josina had tweeted that they were working together, and people were like, working together? No way.
Right.
Boomer Esiason knows what's going on. He is plugged in. He knows some of the decision makers. So if he's hearing this, I mean, that is really, look, regardless of what you think about Deshaun Watson or if you think he did it or not, players should not have a say in their suspensions or their punishments. Again, you may think he's innocent. Great, good for you. Players should not get to decide, and players' agents should not be in the conversations of how long their suspensions are. Ridiculous.
It is absolutely ludicrous. The amount of control NFL talking heads, NFL, like the executives, teams keep giving David Mulugeta and Deshaun Watson control of each of these situations. Mulugeta, instrumental in getting Deshaun Watson the contract that he got from the Browns. Instrumental in getting him, telling him not to play and not playing for the Texans, and Deshaun getting paid for the entire season. But this is where the line should be drawn. Like, there's no reason Deshaun Watson and his agent should have any say, be a part of any conversation when it comes to the suspension. A workable solution. A year was my workable solution. That's the solution,
right?
That's win-lose, right? That's a win for Deshaun Watson, because it's not the 2 years or indefinite suspension that a lot of people want. like if it's anything less than a year, I'm going to be wildly disappointed in the NFL.
I'm going to be disappointed if David Mulugeta was able to stick his chest out and give his opinion. Who cares about David Mulugeta's opinion? I'm just genuinely, genuinely shocked by that. And it would be another case if this happened of the NFL, kind of like how they put end racism in the end zones, which, of course, ended racism. I was really glad they did that. But it would be another example of the NFL sticking their chest out, saying, we're going to take this seriously. We're going to do this, this, and this. And then at the end of the day, letting players have control. I don't get it. I'll never understand it. Speaking of the NFL, which we love on the show, 77 days until the NFL, this player says that he received death threats over a quarterback comparison. You got to hear this. That's next.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
77 days until the NFL season, regular season, we should clarify, kicks off. Very excited for this. Josh Beard is with me today in for Paul Gallant, who I'm sure is very happy and very not sober somewhere. We don't know quite where. We never know. But, Paul, we hope you're well. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. It's usually Paul Gallant's duty to find a jersey number that matches the days until the NFL season. So, Josh Beard, number 77. Who you got?
Look, I'm glad I'm here today. Paul would have made the wrong decision. Oh. Paul wouldn't have picked the right person for this jersey. He would have picked, would have been awful. It would have been, I mean, it would have been fine, would've I been guess. It would have been like a B-rated.
Patriots practice squad player.
Bleh, whatever. There's only one number 77 that matters. And one number 77 in the history of sports that's better than all of the number 77s, could play any sport and be better than everybody who's ever worn that jersey. This man is a gift to athletics.
God?
He is a gift to professional sports. He is my basketball Lord and Savior. That's blasphemous. I shouldn't say that. But he kind of is a little bit. It's one Luka Doncic. I'm breaking the rules.
No,
I'm not picking from the NFL.
No, not allowed.
You cannot do this. This is worse than anything Paul's ever done.
It's happening. Luka Doncic is the number one, number 77 of all time.
Very odd for you to go this direction, my friend.
If he wanted to play in the NFL, he could. Could you imagine Luka as a tight end? Those shifty hips and that change of direction. Ooh, nobody'd be able to stop him on those routes. The problem is he grew up in Sylvania and doesn't know what football is.
Yeah, do we have a backup to this?
You
know what? Let's go with Andrew Whitworth.
No!
Andrew, NFL Hall of Famer Willie Rofe.
There you
Willie
go.
Willie Rofe. I started talking like Scooby-Doo.
I covered Andrew Whitworth in Cincinnati. He then won a Super Bowl with the Rams. Liked Whitworth a lot. Liked him a lot. So that's,
yeah, it's the countdown to football season.
Yeah. Although we love us some basketball. Shout out to
Luka Doncic, is one of the greatest passers of all time. Right behind Tom Brady. Mm. Greatest passers of all time. Tom Brady, Luka Doncic, Peyton Manning. It's very NFL adjacent.
I will say I respect the effort you're giving. I'm just not allowing it. It's like when you're a parent and your kid is like bargaining with you and you're like, no, I respect the fight and the boldness. That's what my parents used to say. Like, we respect that you're a strong teenager and that you're giving us your opinion on the fact that you should be able to stay out until 12, but the answer is no.
I'm using that phrase on my kids now. I respect the boldness.
Yeah,
but no.
Respect the boldness, but the answer is still no.
Okay.
But yeah, shout out to Andrew Whitworth. It's always cool when a player that you covered moves on to a different situation. You're a little bit sad. I was sad to see Whitworth leave Cincinnati because he was so ingrained in Bengals fans. But to see him get that Super Bowl ring, and then, of course, we saw the audio on the field after he retired and told his kids that it was Daddy's last game. All right, so 77 days until the NFL season. Tyreek Hill started a podcast, gentlemen, and the first episode was, we'll use the word bold again, shall we? It was bold. He compared Tua Tagovailoa to Patrick Mahomes, to which a lot of people, including us on the show, were very surprised. All about loving the one you're with, but saying that he would take Tua over Patrick Mahomes seemed a little bit forced. According to NBC, he got death threats for that. It's a little extreme. Quote,
why?
I got death threats from every social media account I own. I got death threats, which is ridiculous, which I love it. You know, Hill never said why he loved the death threats, but don't be this fan, right? Don't be the fan that sends death threats.
Here's my thing with Tyreek Hill saying that. First of all, mostly what he said is he thought Tua Tagovailoa was just a more accurate quarterback than Patrick Mahomes. But what is the guy supposed to say when he gets traded to the Miami Dolphins? He's like, well, you know I'm in Miami now, but Tua kind of sucks, and I don't want to play with him, and he's not nearly as good as Patrick, right? Like there's got to be a little bit of that Terrell Owens, that's my quarterback sure. to it, right? Like, you have to hope for the best with Tua Tagovailoa. It was ridiculous that he said that. The comparison's ridiculous, but
it was on his podcast,
right?
Like
right.
It wasn't like Davante Adams. People were like, "Oh, he compared Derek Carr to Aaron." Davante Adams was asked,
yes.
in a press conference and media availability about comparing the two. Tyreek wasn't asked. Tyreek was on his own podcast.
Well, in fairness to Tyreek, he hadn't seen the multiple highlights of Tua throwing the ball into the ground, trying to throw it 5 yards down the field on the slant. Like, he didn't see those highlights yet, so he didn't know. But, like, the death threats are ridiculous. I love sports, and I love taking them way too seriously sometimes, but that is over the top. But he did say it unprompted, which was a little bit weird. And if you're Patrick Mahomes, like, I know Patrick Mahomes, like, he came out and he was kind of like, he said he was surprised by Tyreek's comments. But if you're Mahomes, you're kind of like, bro, come on, really? Like, you didn't even, it's not like you were in the middle of a press conference. I'd understand that. You just said that. And I'd be a little bit disappointed if I were Patrick Mahomes.
I would be too. And, you know, it's one of those things to where if he really genuinely and wholeheartedly thinks that he's in a better situation, more power to him.
Right.
You are not in a better situation, right. however, than you were one on a team with a dominant defense and then Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Super Bowl champs.
Yeah.
If he is happier with the city, with the environment, maybe he likes that his new coach seems really laid back. That's great. But for him to act like he's in a better situation, it's almost like not an opinion. It's almost a fact that it is not, in fact, a better situation.
It's really good for an NFL wide receiver who's 28, almost 29 years old to go to a situation with a quarterback with less accolades who hasn't proven he can do anything. I feel like that's the best situation an older aging wide receiver who's close to the cliff can. That's the best thing
sure.
for him.
Our text line is lighting up because if you're Luka Doncic, people do not like Dallas and Houston. Hashtag
just,
breaking news.
I'm sorry, I don't make the rules. I just give you the facts.
I know, I do.
Make
the rules.
I don't like that.
I love making the rules. A little too much.
Oh, no.
8998 says, I thought it was John Beard, not Brad
Kellner.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well,
I forgot. You didn't introduce me as John Beard today.
I didn't say
What's going
John.
On? I don't even know who I am anymore.
A couple of weeks ago, I called somebody. I, like, combined their first and last name. Their first name is Mike. Their last name is, I won't say. But it was like, I combined it and said Margs.
That's his nickname now forever.
Which just sounded incredibly awkward. And he's like, do you not know my name? And I'm like, I do. It's just the way my brain works.
What's up,
I got it a little twisted.
The funny part was that yesterday you got Josh's name right consistently throughout right. the entire
Till
show.
The
it was
end.
As you were like saying thanks to John that yeah. you flubbed.
And that was disappointing for me too because I am such a human troll that if she had said that in the middle of the show, I would have destroyed her for it the entire time. And she said it at the end and I forgot about it. Thank you, Texter, for bringing that up.
Yeah, there you go. Screw all things Dallas, Chris and Humble. Yeah, a lot of you feel that way. Number 0170 on the text line says number 77, Valtteri Bottas, Finnish racing driver. Again, not the same sport.
Oh,
love me
yeah.
some racing.
We love Valtteri Bottas.
Valtteri Bottas, but I don't know. We can't do racing for this segment. It pains me to say that.
Can I pick a real football guy? Can I play it? Can
pick,
I have one
yes,
more chance?
Yes.
Fine. I'll
one
pick.
More
fine.
Chance,
I'll pick
Vegas.
This guy. Great offensive lineman, literally one of the best offensive linemen in the history of the NFL. So many accolades. He's been a part of the best or one of the best offensive lines for multiple years. Tyron Smith, baby! Best number 77
okay.
the NFL has ever seen.
I respect that.
At least he plays football.
Yeah, at least I'm maybe
least
picking
he plays
Dallas.
Football.
But
he's pretty good at playing football.
We're going to keep it all D today. I'm just kidding. H-Town for the rest of the show.
1567 says, why in the world are y'all talking football? Who cares? Talk baseball or basketball. Love, Jason. Jason, there's this thing called a show. Our show is 2 hours. It's a total of 8 segments. The first 2 segments were dedicated to the sport in which you're speaking of. Unless you listen to the whole show, don't complain. Thanks for listening. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, our show continues with a little reaction to Arch Manning. Yes, the Lord and Savior of Texas is coming. Or is he? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
A lot of people are mad today. You should listen to our show to be happy because we're talking about sports and all fun things, including feeling old and the aging process. Arch Manning is heading to the University of Texas, hook 'em horns. Great, great job by Steve Sarkisian and whoever else had a hand in getting Arch Manning. He was recruited by Georgia, Bama, pretty much any university probably would have taken him. And he's coming to the Lone Star State.
I wore my Aggie ring today to try, so I could rub it during this segment and make me feel better. I tried to leave the studio, but Vanessa made a rule that I couldn't leave the studio. And like she said, she's in charge.
So I'm not a dictator.
I have to sit through this Arch Manning segment, which is fine. It's football. I'll talk about it. But like as an Aggie, I'm not in a good place right now. Okay. We started the week off really well by beating Texas for the first time in the College World Series. And now I have to listen to this Arch Manning news. And Sean's just back there sneering and laughing at me like some kind of criminal mastermind and arch nemesis villain guy.
Arch nemesis.
Yeah. You're my arch nemesis now. Okay. I am excited for Texas for Arch Manning. I have a lot of family and friends, obviously, that are Longhorns fans. I guess this is cool for them, but I have one question.
Okay.
I have one question for Sean. I have a scenario that one of my friends brought up last
night. Of course, if you don't know, went to Texas.
Yeah. What if Quinn's really good and Arch doesn't want a red shirt? What does Texas do then? Now, that's a good problem to have, right?
I was going to say, any problem that starts with you have a really good quarterback,
right?
I'll let it ride.
You have a really good quarterback.
Let's ride.
And he's fighting with another really good quarterback. Awesome problem to have. Something the Texans haven't known for a while, right? What's going to happen if Quinn is really good? I want you to make your prediction, right? Not what you want, because I know what you want. Yesterday you said you hope that he redshirts for his first year, and then he can come out and play because you don't see Quinn staying there for too long. But what happens if he's not willing to redshirt and Quinn's really, really good? Do you roll with Quinn? Or, I mean, it's Arch Manning. Do you say, sorry, Quinn, bye?
This is where it turns into, well, how good are we talking? What are the degrees of good? Is he Sam Ehlinger good, or is he number one pick in the draft good?
We're talking like top pick in the draft. Maybe not number one,
but a top pick in the draft. Yeah, first round kind of talent. Yeah. It's hard because you would think that with Arch Manning in this process, he would have taken a peek at the depth chart of the places that he's going and done the math as far as like, well, you know, Quinn Ewers, I think, is officially a redshirt freshman. So he's got two more years and then he can bounce.
Think he's going to have carte blanche, right? I mean, I think that they basically said, not just with that, but look at where we're at with NIL.
Yeah, same.
It's going to be, and we talked about this yesterday, where luckily he's from a family where he's going to probably handle it really well.
Yeah.
Unless he's vastly different than not only his father, but his two uncles, he'll be fine. But he's going to have, hey, what NIL deal do you want? Where do you want to stay on campus? Do you want to start or do you want to chill? And then halfway through the season, if you're redshirting and you want a certain time, I mean, like, I think he's Arch Manning and he's going to be able to do what he wants and make those decisions. But you bring up a really good point. I mean, they've put a lot into Quinn.
Yeah. Well, look, the most likely scenario is Quinn is pretty good, but he's not good enough to beat out Arch whenever Arch comes in.
Right.
I think that's the most likely scenario. We're probably going to see Quinn. I would guess that we see Quinn in the transfer portal.
That's what again. I was going to ask. You don't think he'll be okay with that?
No.
Yeah,
oh, no. Quinn Ewers? No, absolutely not. Not even
there
close.
There are some guys that come across as a Greg Olsen that are like, you know what? When Tom Brady's ready, if you lose out, it might as well be to Tom Brady. Sarkisian could probably find some quarterbacks that are like, look, I'd love to be the number one guy, but as long as I'm getting NIL deals in Texas, if I'm backing up Arch Manning, great. I don't think Quinn is that person.
Yeah, well, and to Sean's point earlier when we were talking about this during pre-show, As long as Sarkisian doesn't go full Kevin Sumlin and screw this up,
yeah,
like Sumlin did with Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen, it's going to be fine.
He'll be out if he does.
Yeah, exactly.
You're talking about the NFL's golden family.
Yeah.
If Sarkisian can't make it work with Arch Manning, those donors and those alum are not going to be patient.
That is the scariest part.
Totally.
Is the donors and the NIL. Like, not as far as Arch, because I do think that he's going to get, like, the best advice possible in this. And I don't think he's going to fully screw this up as far as for Arch. But then once you get into, like, the donors and all the NIL people that probably threw money at the Manning family, and then if he's sitting for a year, I would hope that everyone's patient as far as, like, hey, maybe a guy doesn't have to immediately come in week one and start for, at that point, an SEC football team. But I don't know. It's always scary. But yesterday and today, I am just going to be glass half full, glass all the way to the brim full of optimism.
The problem with Arch Manning is it's the last name. It's the fact that he's smart, good looking, and people are already fitting him for a gold jacket. I mean, he's always going to have that pressure on him. I have this question for our audience, and we, of course, want your opinion. So 713-780-3776. We're all on Twitch. We're all on Twitter. Which athlete's child, nephew, relation has made you feel old? Because I read a story, and it was legitimately the first time I felt old. Now, I'm 27, so I know logically I'm not old, but go with me on this. Obviously, I grew up in Indiana. Edgerrin James' son, Eden, is getting ready to go to Howard University to play football. Arch Manning, of course, is ready to go to Texas. So Edgerrin James told TMZ Sports, quote, "I'm calling it right now. They're both going to be in the NFL together, the next wave 2.0. I can't handle that. I mean, I know we're like 3 years probably away from that being the reality where Eden and Arch would be in the NFL together. But if I see Arch Manning, of course, Peyton's nephew, and Edgerrin James' son playing together or against each other, that will be the first time that I felt old, and I'll be around probably 30 when it happens. So when have you, I ask the audience, when did an athlete's child or nephew or whatever come through and you're like, damn, I'm old?
I just need you to know that, like, the last 150 words that you said made me feel very bad about myself.
Okay.
Because you're like, well, one day in the future, this might make me feel old, and I'll probably be 30 by then. As a man who just turned 36.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I don't feel like I'm 36. I never feel like I'm old. I act like I play video games.
But that's
not
old. I love
comic book stuff. It's not really old, but I think my body's 56. My body feels it every day. Honestly, it's some of these NBA players that are playing in the NBA today, and some of the guys that got drafted, like Jabari Smith, made me feel old. I remember watching his dad, Jabari Smith Sr., play in the NBA.
Yeah, somebody said Bronny James. That's a good one, I guess.
That's one.
Since he's not in college or in the league yet, right. I don't really count Bronny James. But
Shaquille O'Neal just signed a summer league deal with the Lakers. That makes me feel really old. I'm trying to think of something like some of these NBA players. Oh, KJ Martin, we just talked about the other day. I mean, I watched Kenyon Martin's entire career. I remember seeing KJ Martin on the sidelines.
2875 just said that on the text line. KJ Martin Jr. being on the Rockets makes me feel very old.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, like, those guys make me feel insanely old. Like, we've seen players, kids, like Steph Curry being in the league. Like, Del Curry played before I paid attention to basketball, right? But, like, I watched Kenyon Martin try to go for Western Conference Finals and try to, like, win playoff games with Carmelo Anthony as an adult. And now his kid is playing in the league. That freaks me out. Those are the ones that made me feel, like, legitimately very old.
Yeah, so I have a brother who's 10 years younger than I am, and so that already throws in some weird, like half-generation gap.
Yeah.
And so it's any player like KJ Barton, Antoine Winfield Jr., where I go, you know, his dad used to play in the league.
I used to watch his dad play
in the league.
I used to watch his dad play about 20 years ago. The other thing that makes me old, it's not a specific player, but whenever we have these conversations, and it comes up all the time, especially in the NFL, especially with skill position players. But what makes me feel old is when we talk about, oh, Derrick Henry's 29, that cliff is coming. He doesn't have much more life in those. He's 7 years younger than me. And we talk about Julio Jones. Man, it's starting at 30. That's when his stats started to drop.
Well, it depends,
that makes me
feel
old.
On which teams you follow and just some pure coincidence. Because, like, Peyton Manning had kids a little bit later, so his kids are younger.
Right.
Reggie Miller had kids really late in life, so his kids are younger. So there's, you know, like Larry Bird's kids didn't end up going to the league. So some of it depends on the specific athletes you cover.
Yeah.
And just like when they have kids. But this is the first time I'm like, damn, I'm 27. And Edger and James talking about him and Peyton Manning's nephew playing in the league together, I'm going to feel like an old woman.
Also, following college football recruiting at all makes me feel old.
Yeah, 100%.
Where, like, you see these tweets, not with Arch, but, like, other tweets. Actually, with some of the Rockets players reacting to Jabari Smith getting drafted, I saw screenshots of their Instagram stories and stuff, and their captions. I was like, I know they're excited.
Yeah.
I know they're happy. I don't actually know what they're saying.
Shad Moss, somebody said, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
What's going to really freak me out, is one day if JJ or TJ Watt have kids and then they also play in the NFL, like if it's like the Clay Matthews family, like where Clay Matthews came in after like Bruce Matthews and like all everybody in the Matthews family had already had one iteration of NFL players. If the Watt family does the same thing if they have sons and they go play in the NFL, I'm going to write a piece of paper. I'm going to hand it to my daughter today. And that piece of paper is going to say, if J.J. Watt ever has a kid that goes to play in the NFL, that's when it's time to put me in a home. Just put me in a home with my computer.
That got dark really quickly.
Give me my shows and my video games and come visit me once a week. Yeah, give me some Depends. Make sure I'm doing – as long as I got my video games and they come visit me once a week, I get to see my grandkids, I'll be fine. I think I'll probably be in like my 50s. But honestly, actually, that life sounds good now. Put me in a home now. Like just bring me food, visit me once a week, leave me to my video games.
And then you can watch A.J. Watt's
because it will be A.J. No.
And then watch him like whittle down his list from like A&M and Wisconsin.
Oh, like, that was one of the funniest moments of J.J. Watt's monologue on SNL was when he said, our parents named us J.J., T.J., and Derek. It's very funny. all right, so we're getting some answers on the text line, but yeah, mostly somebody said this topic is an indictment on many of these players' pullout game. Okay, you know, nothing wrong with having kids young, guys. Come on.
How about Jabari Smith Jr. was born May 13th, 2003?
This is painful. And his dad, by the way, wasn't like a 80s, 90s. His dad was drafted in, like 99, 2000, if memory serves me correct.
I was getting ready to graduate high school when Jabari Smith was born. That's awful. I was almost an adult when he was born. That makes me feel terrible about myself.
Yeah, Jabari Smith Sr. was drafted in the 2000 NBA draft.
Yeah.
If you tell me somebody's dad played, I'm thinking they played in, like, the 80s or 90s.
Nope, that 2000. Was 2000.
That is painful. The wheels keep on turning, of course. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we got Josh Beard with us today, Sean Mapes behind the glass. Let's play a game where we compare the two GMs that we think are on fire here in Houston. What do Nick Caserio and Rafael Stone have in common, and who have you been more impressed by? That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.